Okay, so Leviticus 16, right? Day of Atonement. And we said that that was the center, the apex of the book. And before that was sacrificial law, right? And the institution of the priesthood. And after that, we get the holiness code, how we are to be holy. Okay, so 17, 18, 19, and 20 are going to be applied to basically the common person, and then 21 and 22 are for the priests. Okay, so today, Lord willing, we'll move through 20, 21, and 22. Okay, so chapter 19 was just a lot of, you know, random seemingly laws, but we talked about how the Ten Commandments were all either quoted or alluded to in chapter 19. Okay, now we're going to come into chapter 20, and we've already referred to chapter 20 quite a bit, especially when we were doing chapter 18. So almost everything in chapter 20 has been discussed already in chapter 18 or 19. Okay. But chapters 18 and 19 were to the would-be offender. So don't do this. Don't sleep with this person. Okay. Chapter 20 is more to the community as a whole, what they should do when somebody commits those sins. Okay. So it is a little different. Israel, which we already know, was very different than... Israel was very different than all their neighbors, okay? But one way they were significantly different was even in the law. In Israel, the crimes against family or religion, against God, received the highest punishment, the death penalty. In other ancient Near Eastern civilizations, it was if the crime resulted in economic loss, those had the highest punishments. Okay, so even Israel and how they punished crimes was different than the surrounding nations. So we're going to see in chapter 20 a lot of death penalty, and it's sins against God and against the family received the death penalty. Okay, so can someone read for me chapter 20, verse 1 through 8?
Consecrate yourselves and be holy, for I am Yahweh your God. Keep my statutes and do them. I am Yahweh who sets you apart.
Okay, so the chapter starts out with sacrificing your children to Molech, which we talked about back in chapter 18, verse 21. Okay, and we read this section when we talked about that in chapter 18. Okay, but death by stoning was required for those who offer their children to Molech. Okay, we're going to see throughout this chapter the death penalty is the most common punishment. I mean, this chapter is about very serious crimes. Okay, but a lot of times the method of killing is not specified. Okay, but there are a handful of times when it says specifically how you were to kill someone. And so here it is death by stoning. If you notice, it says in verse 2 at the end of it, the people of the land shall stone him with stones. Okay, so it was the community is involved. This is not, you know, the death penalty today is very sterile and we are very far removed from it, right? It's by lethal injection and, you know, whatever. And but this was everyone is going to be involved, or at least the men, right? Maybe not the women and children, but the community is involved in the stoning of someone. And so it could be a sign that this is the community's rejection of the sin. So if someone offers their child to Molech, then the community is supposed to rise up and punish the person. Obviously not in a mob killing after there's been, you know, a trial or whatever, you know it's happened, but everyone is to be involved. Can we go to Deuteronomy 17 and someone read for me verse 2 to 7? Deuteronomy 17, verse 2 to 7.
That is the man or the woman, and you shall stone them to death. On the evidence of two witnesses or three witnesses, he who is to die shall be put to death. He shall not be put to death on the evidence of one witness. The hand of the witnesses shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. So you shall purge the evil in your midst.
Okay, so if you were the one to accuse someone of offering their child to Molech or worshiping another god, you had to be the one, the two or three, that threw the first stones, okay? Because it's very serious, this would not be something you would want to accuse someone of when they didn't do it, okay? So you had to be the first to throw the stone, but then everybody else would also join in. So it would also be a deterrent for others, right? You shouldn't worship other gods because God is the only true God, but also you would know that it comes with a heavy cost. Okay? Verse 3-5. Okay, so not only do you get stoned, but God sets his face against you and cuts you off. Okay? So idolatry coupled with murder is so despicable that if you look at the end of chapter 3, it says, it defiles my sanctuary and profanes my holy name. Okay, God dwells within Israel. So if the people of Israel turn to other gods, that defiles his name, his reputation, and his sanctuary. Okay, verse 4, if the people of the land, however, should disregard that man. Okay, so disregard, it is very easy to ignore sin. Right, it is much easier to ignore someone else's sin than to do the messy business of getting involved. That's even true today. Okay, especially because those who are most likely to know about your sin, right, are those closest to you, your friends and your family. Okay, and so it's really easy to sweep things under the rug. Okay, now you'd think in the murder of your child, that's a little different, but even so, it's easier to turn a blind eye than to have to accuse and then be the one to throw the first stone. I mean, you would be the one that would be murdering or killing, carrying out the death penalty on your friend or your family, okay? But loyalty to God must override ties of blood and friendship, okay? You had to love God more. You had to be faithful to God more than your friends or your family, okay? But God says, even if the people of the land disregard, right, and ignore the person who has offered their offspring to Molech, verse 5, I myself will set my face against that man, against his family. I will cut off from among their people both him and all those who play the harlot after him. So God says, if you guys ignore it, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, if you fear man them more than you fear me, don't worry. I got it. I'm not going to let this person get away with it. Okay, I will cut them off. Yeah.
It's interesting because he says before that, they shall surely be put to death in verse 2, and the people of the land shall stone him with stones, and then I myself set my face against him.
It repeats it. Yep.
So it is just repeating it, or...
Well, okay, so God is going to be against this person regardless of whether the people do their job and kill him or if they don't do their job, okay? But if the people don't do their job, God's going to cut him off, and which we've talked about before might be a premature death. And then you're living under the weight of, I don't know what's going to happen to me because God is my judge. I got away with it from man, but I know God can still see.
It's just interesting that he puts it up there.
Right.
Because it seems like, well, if he's already dead, how can you cut him off because he's already dead?
Right.
But
it could also be a cutoff of, well, and if you worship another god, right, you don't believe in God and you're going to spend eternity separated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say most likely, because if you have gone so far as to even offer your child to Molech, right? You're not saved. And you're going to spend eternity cut off.
We can't necessarily make that same implication other places, can we? To say anywhere else that he would say, I will cut him off?
Yeah.
We can't necessarily say that it's a matter of
salvation.
Yeah.
I mean, the hard thing with that is then, is there a chance for repentance when that person is confronted with whatever sin? Yeah, I don't know. And in the Old Testament, the doctrine of heaven and hell are not as clear and solidified as they are in the New Testament. So their understanding of heaven and hell was not, God hadn't revealed everything yet. So, but yeah, so I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. Right.
And
right.
Really the only reason it's interesting is because the order that it's put there.
Right.
If it had been the opposite, I could see, okay, he's cutting him off, but then they're stoning him to death. But he already said that he shall surely be put to death. And then he says, I myself will
right.
put my face against him.
Right.
Double judgment.
Yeah. It's a, you get judged from man, but you're going to get,
right.
for sure get judged from God. And even if you get away with it for man, you're
right.
still for sure judged by God. So you're either judged by man and God or just God. Yeah.
And doesn't it, I mean, today, like you were saying, there isn't enough information to want. It's the principle that we need to take with us.
Right.
Regardless of anything, we have offended God.
Right, and God sees, and God will, right, God will bring punishment. Okay, notice also in verse 5, it says he will set his face against that man and against his family. I mean, the idea is your family probably went along with it, okay? So maybe it is the father that offers the child, right? But the whole family is implicated in that. Okay, there's going to be no escaping God. And again, it says, and those who play the harlot after him by playing the harlot after Molech. Okay, so over and over in the Bible, unfaithfulness to God is equated either with prostitution or with adultery. Okay, so verse 6 through 8, this goes to people who consult the dead. These are the mediums and the spiritists, okay? And we talked about this before when we went to 1 Samuel, right, with Saul when he contacts Samuel after Samuel's dead. Okay? So those who seek to consult the dead are also cut off. That's what it says in middle of verse or end of verse 6. I will cut him off from among his people. So God is going to judge. And the thing is, because this could be very secret, right? People aren't necessarily going to know if you sneak off in the middle of the night and go consult a medium or a spiritist, right? It's maybe not as public or not as obvious of, hey, didn't you have 3 children and now you only have 2? You know, I mean, that might be a little more harder to hide than sneaking off in the middle of the night or something too. But God's going to see, and so God will bring judgment. And again, it says to play the harlot after them. Israel's relationship was a covenant relationship with God, like in marriage. So seeking after other gods or means of knowing things like consulting the dead, right, was equivalent to prostitution or adultery. Okay. And then it says, verse 7, you shall consecrate yourselves therefore and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my statutes and practice them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Okay, so Israel had to be different than the surrounding nations. Because God is holy, and God is the one who sanctifies them. He is the one that makes them different. They are his chosen people. Okay? So we're going to do Leviticus 9 through 21. We're not going to read it. We've read a lot of this in chapter 18. Okay? These are going to be sins against family life. Okay? So it starts verse 9. If there is anyone who curses his father or his mother, he shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood guiltiness is upon him. Okay? So we're going to talk. This section is going to be proper conduct in the family or what is improper conduct in the family. Okay? And it starts at home. It starts with your parents. Starts with cursing your parents. Okay? Most sins against the death penalty, most sins against the family require the death penalty. Okay? Now here, curse, this is more than just occasional angry words. Okay? This is more than you just get angry and say something that you really don't mean. Okay? Cursing is the very antithesis of honoring. Okay, the word honor in the Hebrew means to make heavy or glorious. I think it's kabod, which is often used for the glory of God, right? Means heavy, weight is what it means. Okay, so to honor is to bring weight, give glory to your parents. The word for curse is the opposite. It means to make light of or despicable. So basically it's despising your parents, looking down on your parents, thinking that they mean nothing, right? Their opinion doesn't matter. Okay. So that child is to be put to death, and it says his blood guiltiness is upon him. That's like our saying, his blood shall be on his head. That's the same idea, okay? So if you break this law, you know what you are doing and cannot be surprised by the punishment, okay? So this helps maintain the structure of the family. And parents represent the authority of God to their children, so this is almost akin to blasphemy, right? Because speaking against your parents is, in essence, speaking against God. Okay, now it's not all of the same, and some parents are not good parents, right? But you as a child are still called to honor your parents. And this is probably also not talking about, like, four-year-old children that get mad at mom, you know? Okay, this is a grown enough child, maybe even an adult child, that knows better and despises their parents. Okay, so even if you have bad parents, when you're older, you can still find something, you know, to honor or speak well of, or you just don't even need to say anything, right? Okay? Okay, verse 10 to 13. This is basically prescribes the death penalty for adultery. If you take your father's wife, if you sleep with your daughter-in-law, or homosexuality. Okay, so we talked about all these things in chapter 18, but here, and it said, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Here it says, if you do it, this will happen to you. And it's the death penalty. Okay, and it doesn't specify a method of putting to death. It just says, right, surely she'll be put to death. Okay. Verse 14, this is different. It says, if there is a man who marries a woman and her mother, it is immorality. Both he and they shall be burned with fire, so that there will be no immorality in your midst. Okay, so if you take a woman and her mom, I don't know, you and the women, right, would die by burning. Okay, what I thought was interesting is if you go to Genesis 38, can someone read for me verse 24? Genesis 30, that's Exodus. Genesis 38, verse 24. Okay, so burning of prostitutes or the unfaithful seems to have at least been somewhat of a common practice, because that's automatically what Judah turns to. The ironic thing is, right, technically they should both be put to death because that was his daughter-in-law, right? That was the wife of his two of his sons, and he refused to give her the third son. So, but let her be burned is there. And then also we'll talk about later today, chapter 21, verse 9. If a priest's daughter turns to prostitution, she was to be burned. So why? I don't know. I don't really know. But apparently burning was at least a known method of executing the death penalty. And so the Bible specifies it's if you take a woman and her mother, or if a priest's daughter turns to prostitution. 15 and 16 condemns bestiality and says that if you commit bestiality, the person, man or woman, and the animal are to be put to death. Okay, it doesn't specify why the animal has to die, but in Jewish tradition, the animal was to be put to death because the sight of the animal would have been a constant reminder of the heinous crime. Okay, the animal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. So, I mean, because if you think about it, right, the animal really doesn't, I mean, it's an animal. So they don't have any choice really in the matter, but you would put both the person and the animal to death. So, yeah. Yes, and I'm sure you didn't want to have anything to do with that animal after that. So they just killed it. Okay, verses 17 to 21 list sins that don't require the death penalty, but, well, no, I should say, there is no human penalty, but there is divine punishment. Okay, so you are cut off if you have sex with your sister or a woman during her period. Okay, so that's verse 17 and 18. It's the punishment is you will be cut off. Verse 19, it says they will bear their guilt if you have sex with a blood aunt. So you, either your father's sister or your mother's sister. Okay, so what exactly that entailed, I'm not sure that they will bear their guilt, but God will take care of it. And then childless. They will die childless if you have sex with an aunt by marriage or your sister-in-law. Okay? So the God would make you barren. That's verse 20 and 21. And to die childless would be a tragedy in the ancient Near East. Okay? I mean, it's still a tragedy today when people don't have children. However, a lot of times today, people choose to not have children. Okay, in the ancient Near East, there was no choosing to not have children. Everyone wanted children. And so to die, I mean, right, I think it's Rachel, right, mm-hmm. who says to Jacob, give me children or I'll die, right, when she has no children. And he gets mad at her because he knows that it's not his doing.
What about a woman nowadays that can't have kids?
Right. No, I'm saying, well, okay. Well, no, I'm just saying there are some families today, some husbands and wives that don't want kids, and they choose to not have any children. I'm saying back in the ancient Near East, there weren't couples like that. They all wanted children. Yeah, they all wanted children. And so then, I mean, there were still some that were unable to have children, but then that was viewed as a curse, as a tragedy. And I'm just saying today you have married people that choose, that don't want children, that choose to not have children.
And there are some that want children.
Exactly, exactly, right. And that's why I'm saying a lot of... They could be. I mean, nowadays there's lots of different things. And it's not... I mean, it could be God's judgment on a couple, theoretically, or it could just be we have gone from Adam and Eve perfect, and we have degenerated about 6,000 years, and so now there's just a lot of medical problems in our genetics that's part of the, you know, that's just part of the human natural sin, but not necessarily a specific sin, just our bodies are falling apart. And so part of that is some women can't have children. So it's not necessarily judgment of God or anything like that.
What does it mean in verse 19? Mm-hmm. It says,
they will
bear their guilt.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
They're not cut off, they're not stoned, but they'll bear their guilt.
Right, so God will do something about it. No. Yes?
In 17 and 18, does cut off always imply death?
So there's discussion on what cut off means, because it's never really specified. So some people think it means God will bring about premature death. Some people think that they were then thrown out of the nation, like they were cut off from the people, like they had to leave and were no longer an Israelite. Okay, the thing with a lot of the sins that you are, not all of them, but a lot of the sins that you are cut off for, other people might not know about it. Okay, if you sleep with a woman during her period, who's gonna know besides that woman, right, and God? Right, so they are cut off. Well, that might be something that the leadership of the land doesn't know about, and so they can't cast you out of the nation. And so that's why people think that it's premature death by God. But there is no specific, I mean, the Bible doesn't say cut off means that God's going to kill you early.
And premature death does not necessarily perhaps infer death tomorrow.
It no.
Could be just I'm going to die, you know,
right.
Younger than I might have otherwise, and who's going to kill
Right.
The person, because that could be 20 years hence.
Exactly.
And 10 years younger than he was.
Right. 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 But and I think the idea is God's going to take care of it, and now I live under with that knowledge of God's going to do something about it, and I don't know when. And so if you had a regenerate heart, it would make you feel guilty, and I would assume it would lead you to confession, right? Because, I mean, that's what, you know, I know I've felt very guilty or convicted in my spirit about sin and then had to go do something about it, because you feel that weight of I've done what's wrong. And I think
if you just sleep with a lady during her period, what you can't do anything to
rectify it. Right. But remember, this is also the model.
Right.
So, like I said before, you could do everything perfectly under the model and still not be saved, or you could be judged under the model and be saved. So if you did something like that and you confessed and they did whatever, I don't know what they would do, right? Let's say you got cast out of the nation, or you got the death penalty. If you were right with God, you would still go to heaven. Right. 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 Right.
And you would just not know.
Right. Right. Right.
Well, wasn't the man technically unclean for 7 days at this point too, for sleeping with?
Okay, so that was, I think, if it happened by accident. And then this is on purpose.
Okay,
so there was, so then, right, you could get into, oh, it was just on accident, you know? And so that's why God knows, and it's something that maybe man cannot know, you know?
Is this still written in context of, you know,
Ahab and Abihu?
Nadab and Abihu?
Yes, I mean, I mean, everything is basically in the context of Nadab and Abihu being fried, okay? But really, that was before, because that happened chapter 10, and then you get instantly all the clean, unclean laws, right? Because now, day one of the sacrificial system, you have now sullied the entire sacrificial system. So now what do we do about it? So now we get all these clean, unclean laws of these are all the other ways that you can sully the sacrificial system, and then you get Day of Atonement. And then the point of that is this is how you fix it. This is our grand reset button. I mean, and if you think about it, right, this is why the model does not work. It just doesn't work. Even when it was set up, it doesn't work. But the point is that it points to Christ, right? It points to there is somebody coming that is going to fulfill it all and going to replace the system, the model. But like we said before, the Jews fell in love with the model. I mean, and that's the fight Christ fights his whole ministry. Right? Is the Pharisees love the model too much. They love their checklist. They love everything that they've even added to the model. I mean, they took God's model and then they made it like even more impossible to do.
Can you remind me?
Yes.
It looks like these that we've both just been discussing were on purpose.
Yes.
Intentional
sins. Yes.
Remind me, Day of Atonement did not even cover intentional sins.
Yes, it did.
It did.
Yes.
Only the high priest.
So the high priest,
the one day a year,
yes, one day a year goes and takes the blood into the Holy of Holies. Yes, yes. So the Day of Atonement was a grand reset button. We get to start all over again, okay? We had a year of failure because every year is going to be a year of failure, and we get to start afresh, okay? But it only came once a year. Okay, but if you're caught in these intentional sins, well, these specific ones, right, you were supposed, for most of them, you were supposed to be put to death. And so there was no sacrifice that you could offer to save your life. Okay, now you might be repentant and sorry that you did it, but you were still supposed to die. I mean, just like, well, I mean, we don't have much that we do the death penalty for today, but still, theoretically, right, you could still commit murder and receive the death penalty and be repentant about it and go to heaven, but you're still going to die. You're still going to receive judgment here on earth for what you did. So, Okay. Verse 17 says, oh, if there is a man who takes his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter so that he sees her nakedness and she sees his nakedness, it is a disgrace. Okay, what's interesting about this word disgrace is it's the Hebrew word chesed, okay, which is usually translated steadfast love or love, okay? But here it's translated disgrace. And it shows, the emphasis is, it shows the distortion of love into sexual passion only. Okay, that's not true chesed. That's not true love. So that's why they translate it disgrace. Okay. All right, questions? Any other questions? All right, can someone read for me verses 22 to 27?
You shall therefore keep all my statutes and all my rules and do them, that the land where I am bringing you to live may not vomit you out. And you shall not walk in the customs of the nation that I am driving out before you, for they did all these things, and therefore I detested them. But I have said to you, you shall inherit their land, and I will give it to you to possess, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God, who has separated you from the peoples. You shall therefore separate the clean beast from the unclean, and the unclean bird from the clean. You shall not make yourselves detestable by the beast or by the bird or by anything with which the ground crawls, which I have set apart for you to hold unclean. You shall be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy and have separated you from the peoples that you should be mine. A man or a woman who is a medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death. They shall be stoned with stones. Their blood shall be upon them.
Okay, so this, the end of this chapter is very similar to the end of chapter 18, where it talks about, you know, the land is going to spew you out if you do the sins of, if you commit these sins, just like it's spewing out the people before you. Okay. What I thought was interesting is that, again, it emphasizes that they need to distinguish between the clean animal and the unclean. This is going back to chapter 11. Okay, and again, it ties distinguishing between the clean and the unclean animals with being holy as God is holy. Okay, I don't know if you remember, but back in chapter 11, two times in that chapter, it said, be holy for I am holy, relating it to the clean and unclean animals. And here again, remember, it only says it five times in Leviticus. Three times it is tied to clean, unclean animals. Okay, so that was a very big part of what set Israel apart. Now, we know in the New Testament, right, Jesus says it's not what enters the mouth and then passes through the body that makes you clean or unclean. It's what comes out of your heart, right, that makes you clean or unclean. Okay, so we know that eating all the right animals is not going to make you holy. But in the model and in Israel, it was eating the right animals and rejecting the wrong animals that made them different, very different than the nations around them. Okay. And it was how the nations then saw, hey, what is going on with this nation? Right? Why are they so different? And then hopefully that would lead them to Yahweh to see who he really was. Okay, it ends with talking about the medium or the spiritist, the necromancer. They were to be stoned, okay? And so Israel was to be pure, and they cannot mix with the occult, okay? Okay, so in the New Testament, the moral laws stand, the incest, homosexuality, all those kind of things, okay? But the punishments do not, right? This was set in a nation where God is their king. Okay, we do not live in a nation, unfortunately, where God is our king. Okay, so God has given the right of judgment to the government. Okay, so that it's not the church's job to kill the adulterer. Okay, so moral laws stand in the New Testament. The punishments, even in Israel during Christ's time, Israel was not allowed to carry out punishments. Rome reserved the authority to kill, right? That's why they had to take Jesus to Pilate and Herod. Right, because the scribes and the Pharisees, they wanted to kill Jesus, but they had to go through the legal system. Okay, and today it's not the church's job to carry out punishment like that. That is the government's job. Okay, let's turn to one New Testament passage. Let's go to Matthew 15. 3 through 9. And this is going to tie back into don't curse your parents from verse 9. Jesus quotes it, Leviticus 20, verse 9. Matthew 15, can someone read for me verses 3 through 9?
And he answered and said to them, why did you yourselves transgress the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? Mm-hmm. For God said, honor your father and mother, and he who speaks evil of father or mother is to be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever I have that would help you has been given to God. He is not to honor his father or his mother. And by this you invalidated the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you. Mm-hmm. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men.
Okay, so what the Pharisees had done is they took this verse, right? He who speaks evil, father or mother, is to be put to death. But then they say, well, this is how we can get around it. This is how I cannot support my parents. This is how I cannot take care of my parents. I say, oh, mom, you know, I was supposed to help you with rent this month, but I gave that money to God instead. So too bad for you. Okay. And so they had made up the rule that if what you're supposed to help your parents with, you give to God instead, then that's okay. Then you don't have to honor your parents that way. Okay. And so we also see that speaking evil of father and mother could also be not necessarily the words you say, but the actions that you do. Okay. So they were taking what they were supposed to use to help their parents, and they were supposedly at least giving it to God, giving it to temple. And then they thought that they didn't have to then help their parents, okay? And Jesus ties that in with Isaiah, right? In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. So they had made up this rule, and then they're saying, this is from God. This is how it stands. Okay. Questions, chapter 20. All right. So Leviticus 21. This is 21 and 22 go together, and we'll see if we can get through both of them, and it's about holiness for the priests, okay? All of Israel is to be holy, but the priests are held to an even higher standard, okay? All of Israel as a nation is set apart. The priests are set apart even further, okay? And we're going to see there's actually three levels of holiness. You have your average person, okay, you have your priests, and then you have your high priest. The high priest is held to even higher standards than your normal priests. Okay, and those three levels of holiness also correspond to the three levels of tabernacle and who can access what, right? So your average person, they were allowed in the courtyard. Your priests, who are held to a higher level of holiness, they're allowed in the holy place. Then your high priest, who's held to the highest level of holiness, he's allowed into the Holy of Holies. Granted, only once a year. But so you kind of have three levels of holiness and then three sections of the tabernacle that they're allowed in. Okay, can someone read for me chapter 21, verses 1 through 9?
He shall not defile himself as a relative by marriage among his people, and so profane himself. They shall not make any baldness on their heads, nor shave off the edges of their beards, nor make any cuts in their flesh. They shall be holy to their God, and not profane the name of their God, for they present the offerings by fire to the Lord, the fruit of their God, so they shall be holy. They shall not take a woman who is profaned by harlotry, nor shall they take a woman divorced from her husband, for he is holy to his God. You shall consecrate him, therefore, for he offers the food of your God. He shall be holy to you, for I, the Lord, who sanctifies you, am holy. Also the daughter of any priest, if she profanes herself by harlotry, she profanes her father, and she shall be burned with fire.
Okay. So, the first part of this section deals with the dead. What does a priest do if somebody in his family dies? So let's go to Numbers 19 And can someone read for me verses 11 through 13? Numbers 19, 11 through 13.
Whoever touches the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. He shall cleanse himself with the water on the third day and on the seventh day, and so be clean. But if he does not cleanse himself on the third day and on the seventh day, he will not become clean. Whoever touches a dead person, the body of anyone who has died, does not cleanse himself, defiles the tabernacle of the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from Israel. Because the water for impurity was not thrown on him, he shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still on him.
Okay, so this is what happened to anyone who came in contact with a dead person, right? You're unclean 7 days. So for the priests, right, and if you don't follow this like third day, seventh day thing, then you are just unclean, period. And you're not going to be allowed in tabernacle. Well, a priest, that's going to be a problem. That's their job. Okay, so God says dead people make you unclean. So therefore, priests, you're not allowed to be around dead people. Okay, you're not allowed to do funerals. You're not allowed to be around dead people because you cannot become unclean. However, I will allow you certain exemptions. Okay, now that still means that the dead body of their mom made them unclean. Okay, but then they would just be unclean the 7 days and could do the process and become clean again. Okay, so they were only allowed to become unclean for their mother, their father, their son or daughter, their virgin sister, or your brother or your sister. So basically, your very close, immediate family. Okay? If the priest could not be with the dead, it would be harder to have a cult of the dead. Okay? We'll get there. Okay? Yes, if the priest could not be with the dead, it would be harder to have a cult of the dead. Okay? The surrounding nations like to worship the dead. Lots of cultures like to worship the dead, okay? But if your priests are totally separated from the dead, doesn't make it impossible, right? But it makes it a little harder, and it shows that God is totally against worship of the dead, okay? So priests are not involved even in funerals except for those of the very close family members, okay? And notice, the wife is missing from this list, okay? So... one of my commentaries said, the priest's wife is not explicitly mentioned in this list of people. Since she is one flesh with him, the law simply takes for granted that he would defile himself for her. Okay? And we actually have an example. Let's go to Ezekiel. This is kind of a long chunk, but Ezekiel 24. If I can find Ezekiel. Ezekiel 24, and can someone read for me 15 through 27?
The word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, behold, I am about to take the delight of your eyes away from you at a stroke. Yet you shall not mourn or weep, nor shall your tears run down. Sigh, but not aloud. Make no mourning for the dead. Bind on your turban and put your shoes on your feet. Do not cover your lips, nor eat the bread of men. So I spoke to the people in the morning, and at evening my wife died. And on the next morning I did as I was commanded. And the people said to me, will you not tell us that these things... what these things mean for us, that you are acting thus? Then I said to them, the word of the Lord came to me. Say to the house of Israel, thus says the Lord God, behold, I will profane my sanctuary, the pride of your power, the delight of your eyes, and the yearning of your soul, and your sons and your daughters, whom you left behind, shall fall by the sword. And you shall do as I have done. You shall not cover your lips, nor eat the bread of men. Your turban shall be on your heads and your shoes on your feet. You shall not mourn or weep, but you shall rot away in your iniquities and groan to one another. Thus shall Ezekiel be to you a sign, according to all that he has done, you shall do. When this comes, then you will know that I am the Lord your God. As for you, son of man, surely on that day, when I take from them their stronghold, their joy and glory, the delight of their eyes and their soul's desire, and also their sons and daughters, on that day a fugitive will come to you to report to you the news. On that day your mouth will be open to the fugitive, and you shall speak and be no longer mute. So you will be a sign to them, and they will know that I am the Lord your God.
Okay, Ezekiel was a priest, okay? And God takes his wife and tells him not to mourn or to have anything to do with her, okay? Her dead, her funeral or anything like that, okay? And this was to be a sign to Israel. So it shows you that this is not the normal, right? That when a priest's wife died, he did go into mourning, okay? And he covered his mouth, did all the normal mourning signs, okay? But it was to be a sign to Israel that judgment was coming and God was going to take the temple from them and they were not going to mourn because they were just going to be trying to survive. Okay, so it was to be a sign of coming judgment, but for our purposes, the idea was this was to be a shocking sign. Everybody's like, Ezekiel, your wife just died. What is your problem? Why haven't you gone into mourning? And then he says, you know, the judgment that is coming and what God has said. So from that, we deduce that for your wife, and if your wife's in your house, I don't know how you can avoid not being unclean if your wife dies. Right. I mean, it would be very difficult. Yes.
Aaron.
Yes.
When his sons
yes.
died.
Yes.
He wasn't allowed to do anything with them.
Correct. And we'll get there.
Okay.
Yep, we will get there. Okay. So, priests, normal priests, not high priests. We're talking about normal priests right now. They are not to defile themselves for a dead person, only their immediate family. Okay, verse 4, he shall not defile himself as a relative by marriage among his people and so profane himself. This verse is a little hard to translate, but most commentaries agree that this verse means that you do not get to go to any of the funerals or defile yourself for any in-laws. So your wife, fine, but not your wife's mom or dad. Okay, your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your son, your daughter, but not in-laws. Okay. Verse 5 and 6, they shall not make any baldness of their heads or cut their flesh, right? We've heard this before in chapter 19, verse 27 and 28. The ordinary person wasn't allowed to do this, let alone the priests, okay? And we talked about how this was pagan ways of mourning, okay? The Jews had their ways of mourning. They would tear their clothes. They would mess up their hair, cover their mustache, whatever. But they were not to shave their head or cut their flesh. Why? Verse 6, they shall be holy to their God, not profane the name of their God, for they present the offerings by fire to the Lord. Okay? So they're the ones that bring sacrifice. They are not to be involved in any sort of way in any pagan sort of mourning. Okay? Verse 7 and 8 talks about who they are allowed to marry. Okay? They were not allowed to marry a prostitute or a divorcee. So if the woman had been married and was divorced, they were not allowed to marry her. Okay? They were allowed to marry widows. Okay? So the woman had to be of good character. Verse 9, also, the daughter of any priest, if she profanes herself by harlotry, she profanes her father. She shall be burned with fire. Okay, so children reflect on their father. So if a priest had a daughter that turned to prostitution, she profaned her father, made him unholy, right? And she was to be burned. Now, remember, cultic prostitution was very common. So this is not, you know, in that world, this would not be an uncommon occurrence. That your daughter would turn to cultic prostitution. But God makes it very clear that prostitution has nothing to do with the worship of him. And so if a priest has a daughter that turns to prostitution, she makes her father unholy and she has to die by burning.
Would that father then no longer be allowed?
I don't know. Or maybe he would have to be consecrated again if he turns his daughter in. Because also the idea behind it is if you have a priest that is allowing his daughter to be involved in prostitution and still live at home, then he has utterly disqualified himself and probably has turned apostate, right, to allow his daughter to be involved in the worship of another god. Okay. Other questions, verse 1 through 9. We're getting to the high priest, Joyce. Okay, can someone read for me verses 10 to 15?
The priest who is the highest among his brothers, who's had the anointing oil poured on his head and has been ordained to wear the garments, must not dishevel his hair or tear his garments. He must not go near any dead person or make himself unclean, even for his father or mother. He must not leave the sanctuary, or he will desecrate the sanctuary of his God. For the consecration of the anointing oil of his God is on him. I am Yahweh. He is to marry a woman who is a virgin. He is to not marry a widow, a divorced woman, or defiled by prostitution. He is to marry a virgin within his own people, so that he does not corrupt his bloodline among his people. For I am Yahweh who sets him apart.
Okay, so the high priest has an even higher standard. He is not allowed to defile himself for even his mother or father. Okay, and the assumption there is then not anyone else that's in the list of the normal priests. Okay, so if we go back to Leviticus 10 to answer Joyce's question, okay, I should have written down the. Okay, Joyce, can you read for me Leviticus 10, verse 6?
Then Moses said to Aaron and to his sons Eleazar and Ithamar, do not uncover your heads nor tear your clothes so that you will not die, and that he will not become wrathful against all the congregation. But your kinsmen, the whole house of Israel, shall bewail the burning which the Lord has brought about.
Okay, so Aaron is not allowed to mourn the death of his sons, but also who else? Eleazar and Ithamar, his other sons. Now, according to the rules in Leviticus 21, Eleazar and Ithamar should have been able to mourn because a brother's is listed. You're allowed to defile yourself for your brother, okay, a normal priest. But God is saying here, because this situation is different, because Nadab and Abihu came under the direct judgment of God, you normal priests, I am holding you now to the standard of high priest. Aaron, you're not allowed to mourn, but that's the standard I'm going to have for high priest here on out. Eleazar and Ithamar, because of the situations, you also are not allowed to mourn.
The high priest just in general can't mourn.
Right, and I would assume his wife would be the only exception, would be my assumption. I don't have an example. Okay, but I just would think it would be very difficult for the high priest to avoid becoming unclean because of a dead wife. You would think even a dead child, but I don't know, because they're in your house. I don't know how that works, because if somebody dies in your house, you become unclean. Okay, so notice verse 10. It says he's not even allowed to uncover his head or tear his clothes. Okay, so the normal priests, God specifically says, you know, don't cut your hair, don't cut your body, right? Because those are not acceptable ways of anybody mourning. The high priest is not even allowed to do the normal Jewish acceptable ways of mourning, of tearing your clothes and keeping your head, messing up the hair of your head. What's interesting here is, let's go to Matthew. Can someone read for me Matthew 26, 64 to 66? Matthew 26, 64 to 66. Jesus is in trial.
Jesus said to him, you have said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. And the high priest tore his robes and said, he is blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think? They answered, he deserves death.
Okay, so what just happened?
He tore his clothes.
Who did?
The high priest.
The high priest. Is the high priest allowed to tear his clothes?
No.
He is accusing Jesus of what?
Blasphemy.
And what is he himself doing? Breaking the law. So the high priest says, oh my goodness, Jesus, you're claiming to be God. You're speaking blasphemy. But then his response is sinful. His response is to tear his clothes in mourning to show his great shock over the blasphemy. But God says, you're not allowed to do that. Great, be shocked over blasphemy. Don't tear your clothes. You're not to tear your robes. So even in this trial, the high priest himself is not upholding the law that God has revealed. Okay. Okay, verse 11 and 12, right, talks about the high priest is not allowed to mourn even for his father or his mother. He shall not go out of the sanctuary, verse 12, or profane the sanctuary of his God, for the consecration of the anointing oil of his God is on him. I am the Lord. Okay, so the high priest's dedication and service to God is so absolute, he can't even bury his parents. His duties in the tabernacle took precedence even over the death of his family. Okay, he had a very special job. He was the one mediator between God and man. And that was the duty that called above all else. Okay, Jesus kind of echoes this sentiment in Matthew 8, 21 to 22, when the person says, oh, Jesus, I'll follow you, but I have to go first bury my father, right? And God says, Jesus says, let the dead bury their own dead, you follow me. Okay, meaning, right, there are things that are more important than family. Loyalty to God, service to God is more important. Now, hopefully you have your family right there alongside you, but sometimes you don't. And so sometimes you have to choose, right? What am I going to do? Am I going to obey God, or am I going to do what my family wants? Okay, so sometimes you are put in that situation. You have to choose God. Okay, 13 to 15. The high priest had even stricter rules on who he was allowed to marry. He was not even allowed to marry a widow. Okay, so he only had to marry a virgin. Possibly this is because so that you could be 100% absolutely sure that the children are his. Okay, there is no question because his wife was a virgin, right? Because remember, his children, the high priest's children become, well, the males, right, can become the next high priest, but it has to be from the line of Aaron. So if the high priest is only allowed to marry a virgin, then there can never be, I mean, I suppose she could be unfaithful, but the idea, yes, and from their own his own people. Yep. Yep. There can be no question. Theoretically, it's at least as sure as you can get that his sons are truly his descendants, are truly his children. Questions about the high priest? Okay, verse 16 to 24, we're not going to read, but this is about who is qualified and, well, really, who is disqualified to be a priest. Basically, if you had any physical deformity, you are disqualified from priestly service. It says, verse 18, for no one who has a defect shall approach, a blind, lame, disfigured face, deformed limb. It goes on and on. Okay, it lists all the different things that will disqualify you from being a priest. But if you notice, verse 22, it says he may eat the food of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy, only he shall not go into the veil or come near the altar. Okay, so remember, the priests got a portion of almost every sacrifice as their food. And so if you were of priestly descent, but you had some disfigurement, right, you were not allowed to serve as priest, but you were still able to eat the food. You would still be supported through that system. Okay? So if you remember, you were not allowed to offer a sacrifice with a defect or a blemish, right? And now we learn that the priests were not allowed to have a defect or a blemish, and the same words are used for both, okay? So both priest and sacrifice had to be physically perfect, okay? The idea is that holiness finds physical expression or is symbolized by wholeness and normality, okay? Now, it's not that those people were any less valuable in the sight of God, right? But in his model, in his system, it was visual that the priests are perfect, right? And the sacrifice is perfect, okay? And this finds its fulfillment in Christ. Let's go to Hebrews 7. And can someone read for me verse 26 and 27? Hebrews 7, 26 and 27.
For it was fitting that we should have such a high priest, holy, innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. who does not need daily, like those high priests, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins, and then for the sins of the people. Because this he did once for all when he offered up himself.
Okay, so Jesus was the perfect high priest, right? Holy, innocent, undefiled. Okay, then if we go to 1 Peter. First Peter 1:17-19. Can someone read that for me? 1 Peter 1:17-19.
If you address his father, the one who impartially judges according to each one's work, conduct yourself in fear during the time of your stay on earth, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood as of a lamb, unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ.
Okay, so Jesus was the perfect high priest, and he is the perfect sacrifice, right? A lamb unblemished and spotless. So Jesus fulfills both this idea of the perfect priest and the perfect sacrifice. Questions, chapter 21. All right. Chapter 22. We're not going to read most of this chapter. Okay. All right. So verses 1 through 16 is basically about who can eat the food. Okay. So verse 1 through 3, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell Aaron and his sons to be careful with the holy gifts of the sons of Israel, which they dedicate to me, so as not to profane my holy name. I am the Lord. Say to them, if any man among all your descendants throughout your generations approaches the holy gifts which the sons of Israel dedicate to the Lord, while he has an uncleanness, that person shall be cut off. So when you were unclean, you were not allowed to eat of the offerings. Okay, so if you are unclean, you are not allowed to eat part of the sacrifice. This is the priests, right? Tell Aaron and his sons, verse 2. So again, chapter 21 and 22 is specifically talking to the priests. Okay, 20, speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron. 22, tell Aaron and his sons. So these are the priests. So, right, because a priest can become unclean as well. Okay, but when you are unclean, you be careful and you do not eat of the sacrifices. You do not eat of the holy food. The holy and the unclean have to be kept separate. In verse 2, when it says, be careful, tell Aaron and his sons to be careful, the root of that word, the Hebrew root of that word is the same word that we get the word Nazirite from, for the Nazirite vow, and it means to put away for separate use or treat as distinct. Okay, so they were to treat as distinct, as totally separate, the holy gifts, the portions of the sacrifice that they were allowed to eat. And they had to be very careful to know what that was, because if they were unclean, they were not allowed to eat from it. Okay, and the punishment is that they will be cut off. Okay. Then verses 4 through 9 list various ways that they could become unclean, right? If they're a leper, if they have a discharge, if they touch a corpse, if they touch a dead, you know, mouse teeming thing, okay, you would be unclean. And then when we studied the unclean clean laws, like most other things, the way you become clean is you bathe and are unclean to evening. So verse 6, it says, and he shall not eat of the holy gifts unless he has bathed his body in water. Verse 7, but when the sun sets, he will be clean. Afterward, he shall eat of the holy gifts. Okay, so if you become unclean, you have to take a bath, and then you're unclean till evening. Once the sun sets, the new day has started. And then you are clean again. Okay? Verse 8, he shall not eat an animal which... Verse 9, they shall therefore keep my charge so that they will not bear sin because of it and die thereby. Because, so if you are unclean and you approach the holy gifts, right now you are mixing the unclean with the holy. Those things do not go together. And the threat is that you could die. Okay, verse 8, they're not even allowed to eat animals that have died of natural causes. Remember before it says if you find an animal that's torn or has died, you're allowed to eat of it, but then you become unclean. Okay, here it says the priests, they're not allowed to do that. They do not eat that meat. They basically only eat meat of the sacrifice, which is the holy. Okay, so the priests are held to a higher standard. Verse 10 to 12, okay, this talks about who's allowed to eat the meat of the sacrifice. Okay, sacrifice and tithes were the income of priests because they had no land of their own. Okay, so they had to be supported in some way as well, so that's how, this is how they were provided for. So because of that, the priest's family also got to eat the holy food. And by holy food, we mean the portions of the sacrifice, which also, remember, included grain offerings as well. So it's not just meat. And offerings of first fruits, right? So it's probably, you know, fruits and vegetables as well. Okay. So verse 10, no layman, however, is to eat the holy gift. A sojourner with the priest or a hired man shall not eat of the holy gift. But if a priest buys a slave as his property with his money, that one may eat of it. So family included your biological family and slaves. Hired men and visitors don't count. Okay, so if you have a visitor or a hired person, they're not allowed to eat the holy food, but family and slaves are allowed to eat the holy food. Okay, the word for layman can also be translated stranger, and it usually refers to Gentiles, which is interesting, someone not Israelite. Okay, but here it's referring to those who are not of the sons of Levi, not of priestly descent. Okay. Verse 12, if a priest's daughter, right, God thinks of everything, is married to a layman, she shall not eat of it. Okay, because in their culture, if you were a daughter and you married a man, you now became part of his family. So now you are part of a family that is not of priestly descent. You're not allowed to eat. Verse 13, if your husband dies or you get a divorce and you have no children, then you would return to your father's house. So now if the daughter comes back home and is under the priestly roof, now she can eat of it again. Okay, but only if she has no children, meaning she has no way of supporting herself. Okay. Verse 14, but if a man eats a holy gift unintentionally, then he shall add to it a fifth of it and shall give the holy gift to the priests. They shall not profane the holy gifts of the sons of Israel, which they offer to the Lord, and so cause them to bear punishment for guilt by eating their holy gifts. Okay, so if a layman accidentally eats holy food, he is in essence stealing from the priests, right? That might not be his intention. It's accidental, but he has taken of their income, basically, which is theft, okay? And so he has to pay it back, adding a fifth to it. So 20%. Verse 16, when it says, and so cause them to bear punishment, that word punishment or punishment for guilt can also be translated iniquity requiring a guilt offering. Okay? So remember when we talked about guilt offering, one of the reasons you had to offer guilt offering is if you sinned against the holy things of the Lord. So this could be one of the ways you did that. You eat the holy food that you're not supposed to eat. You've sinned against the Lord. So now you have to pay back the priest by adding 20%, and then you have to offer a guilt offering to the Lord to atone for your sin. Okay? Questions?
I'm glad we don't live in that system.
Yes. All right, 17 to 33 talks about what animals are acceptable. Okay, so a lot of this is repeat from chapters 1 through 7 of what is an acceptable offering. Okay, and it talks about what is unacceptable. The emphasis here is on what is unacceptable. So verse 20, whatever has a defect, you shall not offer. Okay, and then verse 22, it lists those blind, fractured, running sore, eczema, scabs. A lot of these defects are similar to what disqualified a priest from serving. Okay, not everything is exactly the same, but a lot of them are parallel. Okay, so the blemishes that disqualify a priest would also disqualify an animal. So both, again, both priest and sacrifice have to be perfect. Verse 23, in respect to an ox or a lamb which has an overgrown or stunted member, you may present it for a freewill offering, but not for a vow. It will not be accepted. Okay, so remember, the freewill offering was the peace offering where you got to eat part of it. Okay, so if you're offering a freewill offering, means it's totally voluntary, it's not required, so there can be some small blemishes, there can be something wrong with the animal, and that will be accepted. Okay, because you're sharing a meal with God, that's the point of the offering, is fellowship, not atonement for sin or dedication to God. So there, some small blemishes are accepted, but for the most part, blemishes are not accepted. Verse 24, also anything with its testicles bruised or crushed or torn or cut, you shall not offer to the Lord or sacrifice in your land. That word for sacrifice can be translated do. So it could say you shall not offer to the Lord or do in your land, meaning you are not to castrate animals. Okay, period. Don't sacrifice them. Don't do it. Okay, Deuteronomy 23:1, we won't turn there, but it says that castrated men are not allowed to worship. They're not allowed to come into temple or tabernacle. Okay, so castration damages God's good creation. Right? And holiness is symbolized by wholeness. Right? And also, you are not able to fulfill God's command to be fruitful and multiply. And that command is given both to man and animal. Okay? So they were not to do that. And any castrated animal was most definitely not to be offered to God as sacrifice. Okay? 26 to 30 talks about other rules for offering sacrifices, okay? The animal had to be at least 8 days old, so they had to at least remain with their mother 7 days, okay? And also, verse 28, if it's an ox or a sheep, you shall not kill both its young, it and its young in one day. So you're not allowed to offer mother and baby on the same day as sacrifice, okay? Not specific, but it does fall in line with other laws. Oh, we don't have time. But Deuteronomy 22, verse 6 through 7 says you're not allowed to take a mother bird and its eggs. Like you take the eggs and you leave the mother bird so that she can have another, you know, or young. You can take the baby birds but leave the mother. Don't just wantonly kill them all. Okay. Or Deuteronomy 20, verse 19 to 20, says that when you are at war and you're at war, don't just go destroy trees. Actually, did you know it says that? It says don't destroy the fruit trees. Why? Because you'll eat from it and it's source of food. It says you can cut down trees that don't produce fruit to build your siege weapons, but don't go about just destroying. Okay, remember, God gave Adam the job of caring for the earth. So even in the law, we see different laws that are like, yes, you're allowed to use the earth. You're allowed to kill and eat and cut down trees, but you don't do it just to destroy. And you don't just destroy everything, like the young and the bird, because then the mom can have, you know, have more babies again. But if you destroy both, then you just cut it off. So there's no specific reason, but it's very consistent with other rules in the law that say to not just wantonly kill and destroy. Yeah.
And so there would have to be a system so you know who was the mother and who was the
yes.
baby.
Yes. Oh, and I'm sure they came up with whole tons of ways to do that.
Well, yeah. I know in the bird area, the males are always a darker color than the females, like in robin. The robin has a darker breast.
Right, but I mean, especially for like sheep and oxen or whatever, you would have had to know which is the mom and which is the, yeah.
Sort of like, okay, who's the kid is this?
Yeah, yeah. And you had a...
Yeah, because even, you know, as you read through and it looks like bloody and you know, killing everything.
Right.
That just shows that in, even though God required these, there's also the compassion and the mercy to the creatures. He's not just wantonly saying, get out there and just bring them in and kill them.
Yeah, right.
There's a,
there's a compassion and a sensitivity that
right.
he has also.
Yes.
It's,
yeah.
He's not just a bloody God.
Right. 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 Yeah. Verse 31 through 33, so you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord. You shall not profane my holy name, but I will be sanctified among the sons of Israel. I am the Lord who sanctifies you, who brought you out from the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord. Okay, so the foundation and motivation for obedience is the deliverance from Egypt. Okay, constantly he's reminding them, I'm the one that brought you out, right? This was the formative saving event in the Old Testament. And remember, we talked about Exodus is all about the name of God and salvation. It's how he has saved them, right? And he's constantly pointing back to bringing them out of Egypt, right? And they are to obey so they do not profane God's name, so they do not give God a bad reputation, right? This is the nation God has chosen to be his, to bear his witness to the world. So when they disobey, it sheds ill light on God, which they did all the time, right? But they were not to, because their disobedience profanes the name of God, gives him a bad reputation.